I got to tell you, I've always been fascinated by opera singers and their ability to just belt out these amazing notes. I've got a radio voice, and that's as much musical talent as I have. By the way, thank you, and welcome to Back to Sundial here on WNLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. You know what? If you think opera is just elegant and refined, prepared and surprised, be surprised, because we're going to talk about the opera today, a show that's coming here to South Florida. Our next guest is appearing in an opera that's violent and bloody and a classic. The opera is, see, I'm all bouncing all over myself here, Lucia di Lammermoor, and my guest is soprano Anna Christie, and she is singing Lucia with the Florida Grand Opera. Her next performance is tomorrow night at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts in Fort Lauderdale, and she, I'll tell you what, I'm tripping over myself today because this is an honor. I really appreciate you being in here.
Thank you very much for having me.
You know what? Let's start with this. You've performed in operas. I'm going to go back. You've performed in operas when you were a kid, right?
I did. I was about 10 years old growing up in Pasadena, California, and I was involved in the Los Angeles Children's Chorus, and we had been asked to perform the children's choruses at what was then called the Los Angeles Music Center Opera, and they were looking for children from our chorus to perform in Puccini's La Bohème with Placido Domingo and Thomas Hampson, very famous opera singers then as they are now, and we did we were street urchins, and we sang a very classic scene. Act two of La Boheme, and I really was hooked from that moment. I would sit on the floor in the wings and watch the scenes that I wasn't in, up close, and watching these people play out these dramas up close like that really hooked me.
Did Placido Domingo interact with the kids?
Of course he did.
What was that like?
He was so kind always, and funny, and very generous. With his attention toward us, and then as he is now, for sure.
What was it that impressed you most about that experience?
Probably, first, the music, I think, really is beautiful, and Puccini tends to be pretty catchy. You know, this is difficult to get those tunes out of your head, and the larger than life aspect. I mean, these sets were huge. The chorus was massive. There were like 50 things going on at one time. For a kid of 10 or 11, that's way better than TV. I mean,
you know what I wondered? How many of your friends would talk to you about opera?
At that point?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what I was doing at 10, and I'm going to be honest with you. That wasn't one of the things that we were talking about as kids.
All right, I know. But for us, we just thought it was normal. I mean, we sang together, the kids in the LA Children's Chorus, we sang, you know, once or twice a week together we practiced. So it was just kind of our thing. It was like, you know, other kids went to play soccer. They talked about soccer. Other kids went to ballet class. They talked about ballet. We talked about chorus and singing.
When did you know, or when did you think that opera was going to be, you know, your passion, your work, mm-hmm. your livelihood?
I think at that moment when I was 10, I thought, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
At 10, you thought, I want to do this.
I was like, this is way more fun than I think probably anything else could be. And I was already fairly musical. I played the piano for a few years by that point. There was music in my house. My mother sang to me a lot, and we sang together when I was a child. And my father played a lot of opera and music, you know, on a Sunday morning. We wake up to Handel, you know. But that was just my upbringing. But even if I hadn't had that, I would still have thought that what I was living through, seeing the opera at age 10, was the coolest thing I'd ever seen.
At what point did you actually begin, I guess, your traditional training
right.
and schooling for opera?
Probably when I was about 15, I started private voice lessons. And that was probably a good thing, because if you start too early, if any parents of young singers are listening, if you start too early, you have there's a chance of damaging the voice and pushing it too far too soon when it's just physically not mature enough to do so. So when I was 15, I was fortunate enough to have a teacher who was incredibly cautious Didn't want to push my voice too soon. And so by the time I decided I wanted to be a voice major in college and went to college, I was still fairly unformed as an operatic soprano. And that was kind of, college was where I did the bulk of my training for that. But it's possible that she saved me a lot from a lot of having to fix bad habits and things that can come up in high school. So the more careful you are, possibly the better off you might be. But also in high school was when I fell in love with theater, which for me is the main draw for opera, because it's live and there are no microphones and these people are just singing their hearts out. And that kind of immediacy you can't get from a screen. You can't get from there's really nothing like it. There are a lot of people on stage. There's a huge orchestra in the pit. There's a lot of stuff going on. It's loud. Passions are high. Drama is high. That just was very attractive to me.
Did you find yourself in a situation where you were having to choose between going the route of opera or musical theater?
I did. And that was because I happened to be good at other things like dancing and acting. And so basically what my decision was, do I go musical theater or do I go opera? I think in the end I decided that singing was my strongest suit, and that also at that time, it's beginning to change now, but at that time, the roles that I would be up for in musical theater were the young ingenue, and at that time it was a little bit restricted to blonde and blue-eyed girls, and I'm half Japanese, so that was going to be a little difficult. Although I do blonde wigs very well. So the other thing about it was career stability in opera. Our contracts at that point were 2 to 3 to 4 years in advance signed. So you knew where your paychecks were coming from for a few years. On Broadway, you sign with a show and hopefully it's a hit, and when you're done you're unemployed, so unless you're a huge star, but there are not that many of those.
Again, I'm talking with Anna Christie. She is playing Lucia di Lammermoor. She is going to be with the Florida Grand Opera. Her next performance is coming up tomorrow night at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts in Fort Lauderdale. You talked about the fact that you are half Japanese, right?
I am. Mm-hmm.
You went back to Japan a lot as a kid, though.
I did,
right?
Every summer, yeah,
for a
month.
And what did that do in your, I guess, in your upbringing, musically, training? I mean, did you get to experience a lot of music while you were there?
No, actually not. I'd say the extent of that would be that my mother sang, and I sang Japanese children's songs together constantly when I was a child. So music was always there. And that's common in Japanese children's lives, for sure. I think more than anything else, it growing up biracial and biculturally, it just gave me a worldview that was a little bit different from maybe a lot of my fellow students. And now, obviously, I travel the world constantly, and it just to me is, it's not that big of a deal.
Did you get any, want to say it the right way, is, I mean, any of the trips that you made back to Japan, did you have any contact with opera there? What's opera like for opera lovers in Japan?
Well, when I was growing up, there was no contact with opera. But now, as an opera singer, I do go back quite often to sing there. And there's an interesting difference between the audience in Japan and the audience pretty much anywhere else. And in Japan, you can feel their concentration so clearly. It's just this energy. So when you're singing on stage in an opera, anywhere you are, you feel the energy of the audience. And that is what you, in turn, you internalize it and you channel it and you send it back out. And whether or not we know we're doing it, that's what happens. So if you get an audience on a Friday night that's tired from a whole work week and a little restless and maybe had a few drinks, you know, I mean, we get that energy, and it actually makes the show a little more difficult for us to propel along. But then on a different night, you get an audience who is completely involved and completely engaged, and it makes a huge difference. So in Japan, what I've found is that they don't make a lot of noise. They don't hoop and holler after an aria. They at the end of the piece, they clap for like an hour. It just goes on and on and on. And so it's actually just it's a different experience. And I've just found it very interesting.
Having never traveled out there, I wouldn't have known that. But I find that's fascinating that you're feeling the audience that way.
Yeah.
I just never thought of that. All right. So you've played Lucia in this current role, but you've played this a number of times now.
I have. This is my sixth time.
Sixth time. Mm-hmm. How does it change every time you play it?
Sure. Well, obviously, my first time singing it was in 2003, I think, and then 8 and 9, and eight and 10, and then this past spring, and then now. So, obviously, I've been in different stages of my life over those years. So that always affects where you are as an artist. But, excuse me. I think also the production definitely changes your experience of the role. I've had three instances. Oh, I also did it in 13 in Toronto. But I performed it. I've done it three times in very traditional productions where there's not a lot of kind of abstract stuff going on. And I've done it three times in the same production that went twice in London and then it traveled to Toronto. And that production was slightly more maybe abstract, maybe a little bit more risque, but I thought the drama was very, very strong. And so the experience of that really changed the piece for me. What's happened, though, over the course of singing it six times in different spaces and different productions is that my perception and my kind of gathering of information to decide how I want to see her and play her has kind of solidified, such that by the time I get to Miami, for instance, I'm always definitely open to what a director the journey that particular director wants me to take. I'm always absolutely open to that, but I've already made some decisions in my head about who she is. So I bring a lot to that table as
because
well.
Because I've always wondered, too, any actor or performer has played a role for so long or many times that they don't, do they maybe perhaps the next one, hey, let me take this in a whole different direction.
Sure. Well, I mean, yes. I mean, I think with every time I discover another three or four nuggets about her that I didn't know before or didn't acknowledge before. So that's always very interesting for me because who wants to do the same thing over and over again?
But if you're good at it, again, we're talking with Anna Christie. She is she's performing with the Florida Grand Opera. Her next performance of Lucia di Lammermoor is coming to the Broward Center of the Performing Arts in Fort Lauderdale. That is tomorrow night. We're going to take a quick break, come back and talk about that show and more here on Sundial on WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. What you're listening to there is the performance, Lucia di Lammermoor, and that is Anna Christie you're hearing. She is singing Lucia with the Florida Grand Opera. Again, her next performance coming up tomorrow night at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts in Fort Lauderdale. All right, so let's talk about the show. For those who don't know, I mean, spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, but, you know, as we talked about, you've played this role a number of times now. This is a sort of Romeo Juliet, except Juliet marries somebody else and then kills her husband.
Yeah.
This is a violent show.
It is. Basically, when you meet Lucia at the beginning, she is young and in love. And yet she knows that the man she loves is the mortal enemy of her family. So she's in a bit of a pickle about that, but it doesn't matter. She's young and impressionable, and she just, you know, she's like, it doesn't matter. She loves him. And then he comes and says, I have to leave to go to France to further, I think, the Scottish cause. remember what he says. And he says, before I leave, I'm going to go talk to your brother and ask for your hand in marriage. And she says, oh, you can't do that. You can't do that. He'll kill you. Don't do that. Let's keep it our secret and we'll run off together, kind of thing. Yeah. And so they pledge their love to each other and, in fact, decide at that point to marry each other in the eyes, just under the eyes of God, basically. So from that point, she believes that she is married to him, and they exchange rings and all that. And then the next two scenes with her brother and the priest who ministers to their family, her love has been gone for quite a while, and she's not heard anything from him. And that's secretly because her brothers had all of their letters intercepted. But she doesn't know that. So she doesn't know what to think, but she still loves him. And her brother says, our family fortunes are waning. You have to marry this other guy in order to save us. And you have to do this to save me, to save us. This is you. You have no option. She's still kind of pushing against it, fighting against that, and trying to stand up for herself. And yet it's just this constant oppression by all the men in her life. And then it comes to the wedding scene where she is forced to marry this other man. And she just does it because her brother has given her a fake letter that says her love has married somebody else, and et cetera, et cetera. Long story short, she marries the guy. The love comes back and interrupts the weddings when the wedding is reception and says, what is going on? And they tell her that, well, look, she's just married this other guy. You have to leave. And he curses her, basically. He damns her. And she is completely broken at that point. And then in the way I see it is what then propels her after the wedding night and during the wedding night to go mad. Which is kind of musically the mad scene at the end of the piece. It's, you know, she has gone crazy after she has murdered her bridegroom. I think that the bridegroom comes across as a nice guy on the surface, but he takes her back to that room and some stuff happens that we probably wouldn't want to happen to her. And I think she just grabs, he dies by his own knife. She grabs his knife and kills him.
The undertone is that there's sexual violence.
Yeah. It's not said in the script or anything, but for me, that's kind of, she's definitely already walking that line between sanity and insanity. But I think what flips her over the top to actually kill somebody, because she's not murderous before that. She's just very upset and delusional.
Even though it's a classic, there's something interesting about, with that undertone of the sexual violence, mm-hmm. and a woman being victimized this way, it kind of flows with what we see happening right now in culture.
It's kind of a mess, isn't it? Like, I mean, in a good way, I think it has to come up because in every business it's happening and has happened always.
Some people may not know that, you know, there are always going to be more than one performer performing a role, because with mm-hmm. opera, unlike musical theater, mm-hmm. is that because of the intensity of the work, you need more time in between.
Yeah. Our voices can't do this every night. It's kind of like a pitcher on a baseball team.
Interesting comparison.
It's almost exactly the same. Our voices are a muscle, and in a performance, they get worked and they get a little, not inflamed necessarily if you're singing correctly, but you don't want to put that kind of pressure and stress on your vocal cords every day, because as even if you're the healthiest singer alive with the best technique in the universe, it's still a little bit of wear and tear. So you don't want to do that every night.
What's the typical procedure for you in protecting your voice and protecting your throat?
Right. So I never, ever, ever go to like a bar that might be loud. Anywhere that is loud enough that I have to talk over the din. I can feel it already. Leaving that space, I can feel the stress on my cords. I try to get as much sleep as possible, although I have two young children, and that makes it harder. I try not to get sick, which is also difficult with two young children. I try, when I'm singing a role like this, Lucia is different from other roles in that she's in
You're most of the show.
Every scene except the first one and the last one. But I'm in every other scene, and I sing a lot in every other scene. So it's a bit of a marathon. And it's okay. I've sung it enough that I know kind of how I need to pace myself. But it still needs I still need to be on my optimal shape and rest in a way that in other roles maybe I don't need to.
You ever lost your voice?
No. Before a show, you think?
I'm just curious if you ever have lost your voice. That's got to be frightening for
definitely,
a singer.
Definitely. And actually, over this Thanksgiving break, we had our three shows here in Miami, and then we took a break, and we're back here now for the Fort Lauderdale show. And I went home, and my daughter had laryngitis. She didn't, have a normal cold. She didn't have, a cough or anything. She had laryngitis. She couldn't talk. And wow, that really kind of freaked me out. It's because I can't, it's work, you know, it'd be like cutting off a surgeon's fingers or, you know, taking out the brain of a business guy. I mean, I can't do my work if I can't phonate. So, we didn't have too many cuddles, unfortunately.
You know, talking about being, having a family. Mm-hmm. So it's being a family woman, and then you have this career, and mm-hmm. it's a career where you're traveling.
Yeah.
You are all over the world. Mm-hmm. How has it changed after becoming a mom? Does it mean that it's just more work-life balance or you're not doing as many shows?
Both. I've definitely, after my children are 6 years apart, which was very helpful. And my daughter traveled with me all around the world for the first 5 years of her life. And we were on the road constantly. And that was just, she didn't know that she thought everybody did that. So she was in preschool sometimes and sometimes not, but she was always with me. And then she entered kindergarten, and then it just is more difficult to pull them out of school. And so from that point, I've really had to pull back on the work that I can do. This performance here in Miami really worked well because it encompassed her fall break from school, and they could come out here for 10 days. So there's a lot of logistical planning, and when I am offered a contract, I really have to consider the impact on my family and on my children, because why have children if you're not going to be there for them? So that's definitely made my career take a turn. But on the other hand, the other option is not to have children, and for me that was not possible. So definitely the life work balance I think is the same as with any woman who has children and works. You're either with them or you're not, it's the same thing. It's the same planning, it's the same finding care for them, etc. But my life, there's just a little bit more planning involved because of the travel.
I don't want to let you go without asking you this question mm-hmm. very quickly. We have just about 30 seconds or so. Is mm-hmm. for people who've never been to the opera, or, they just think, oh, no, that's, I'm not into that. How do you sell them on the idea, go to a show and experience the opera?
Sure. I love for people who have never been to an opera to come to a show like Lucia, because I promise you're going to be hooked. There's no way around it. We had a whole audience of middle schoolers come for our final dress rehearsal, and they were screaming. Every time something happened, they said, or they were like, oh my gosh. Like, we could literally hear their reactions. The drama is so intense. They loved it.
And if you can get the attention of middle schoolers.
That's what I'm saying.
Anna Christie, again, is singing Lucia in Lucia di Lammermoor. And again, that's with the Florida Grand Opera. Her next performance tomorrow night at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts in Fort Lauderdale. Anna, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. I didn't want to take up too much of your throat there. Protect it before the show tomorrow. So, yeah. And that's the program. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening.